You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Megan Mandeville. Today we'll be speaking with Elise Claussen, Executive Director of the Crime and Justice Institute. Elise Claussen joined the Crime and Justice Institute in November 2001. As Executive Director, she leads the organization, which focuses on creative, collaborative approaches to complex social and public safety issues. Claussen has 29 years of experience in the criminal justice field and a substantial background in education, substance abuse treatment, and mental health. She has worked extensively with elected officials and other policymakers as both a national consultant and department director. Just prior to joining CJI, she was director of the Department of Community Justice in Multnomah County, Oregon, and oversaw both juvenile and adult community corrections. While at the county, she implemented major system reform and service delivery improvements using best practices research. Additionally, she served as the assistant director of the Oregon State Department of Corrections for Community Corrections. Her work at the state level involved the development of partnerships between public safety stakeholders, including the courts, sheriff's associations, district attorneys, county commissioners, and community corrections directors. She also played an integral role in developing legislation and statewide policy regarding sentencing guidelines, structured sanctions, local management, and program evaluation, where she promoted community corrections balancing supervision, sanctions, and treatment. As executive director of CJI, Claussen's goals include empowerment of communities, system reform, policy, advocacy, research, and impact analysis in the public safety system on both a local and national level. Today, she will talk with the Corrections Connection about implementing evidence-based practices in community corrections. Welcome to today's live talk, Elise Claussen.
Thank you.
To start out here, Elise, can you talk a little bit about evidence-based practices in general and the What Works philosophy?
Sure. The What Works philosophy, or the sort of What Works genre, has been around for a couple of decades, and it was really done by some researchers, Andrew Gendreau and others, where they reviewed lots and lots of research that had been done on what actually made a difference in terms of reducing new crime with offenders. And the evidence-based practices has really something that's been drawn from that, some of that work and many other researchers' work. And I think one of the things that's important to say is that this research is had to meet, you know, some really good, strong research criteria, and has been literally reviewed thousands of research studies, and from that we've really drawn a set of principles, some things around programs, but also a set of principles around what things really make a difference in terms of reducing new crime and new victims by people who are under the supervision of corrections.
So how can these evidence-based practices help community corrections agencies better serve their clients?
Well, in a number of ways. If in fact they really organize their systems to deliver evidence-based practices, so they give the right kind of supervision practices, the right kind of intervention and treatment and sanctions, it's number one, it's very cost-effective, which I think is really important in today's world. And secondly, the research is showing significant reductions in continuing crime with people who are at a higher medium risk to commit more crime. So by reducing that crime, you're saving not only public tax dollars and more efficiently using those corrections tax dollars, but you're also really saving law enforcement dollars, court costs, and the cost, most importantly, to victims and to our society.
And what is the Crime and Justice Institute's role in the NIC initiative promoting evidence-based practices?
The Crime and Justice Institute has a cooperative agreement with the National Institute of Corrections. They put out a request for proposals a couple of years ago, and we responded to that and won that bid and have worked cooperatively with the National Institute of Corrections. And that makes it different than a traditional grant. I mean, we really see, for instance, Dot Faust, who's a project manager at the National Institute of Corrections, as a part of our team, and we have a team that includes not only our staff, but some of the top consultants around the country that work in corrections. They work in both organizational development and collaboration. They are researchers and experts in evidence-based practices.
Now, can you discuss the importance of using an integrated model to implement evidence-based practices and how that fits in with the NIC initiative?
Sure. We spent about a year once we were awarded the cooperative agreement actually developing our model and working through what we thought were the evidence-based practices and boiling it down to about 8 basic evidence-based principles. From my own experience in Oregon and other places where I have done some work, and many of the consultants and practitioners, current practitioners that we talk to around the country, I must have interviewed dozens of people, what we found is that it is not enough to teach people the programmatic things and the assessment tools that are called for in evidence-based practices, but really you have to go through an organizational change model so that people really learn, so that staff learn new skills, gain new knowledge, and actually really do their work differently. So we felt like organizational development was really, really important. So evidence-based practices is the content of the work, and organizational development is really the internal strategy to actually do system change within a major corrections or community corrections organization. The collaboration piece is also extremely important because we need to work with all of those stakeholders in the community, like the judiciary, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, human service agencies, victims, and others, because the kind of work that this entails really impacts their work as well. And so it's very important in the criminal and juvenile justice system to work in a collaborative way.
Now, can you go into some of the specifics of how CJI is working with the states of Maine and Illinois to assist them in their effort to shift towards evidence-based practices?
Sure. The kind of work that we do is we prepared, you know, lots and lots of materials, and we did sort of a major kickoff in each state where they brought in many of their staff, their managers, and they brought in what they saw as sort of their partners in their state. In Illinois, that meant they brought in most of the county directors because Illinois is a decentralized state. It is managed under the state court system, and then state court passes through resources to the local counties and jurisdictions, and then they provide the direct supervision in the community. In Maine, all of community corrections and institutions is under the executive branch, and it's all part of the Department of Corrections. So, but basically, the model is similar in the sense that we did this kickoff, and we brought all of these stakeholders together and really tried to get everyone to sort of a base level knowledge about what evidence-based practices really are and what it would mean in their systems, and get a lot of input from them around what their needs were, what their concerns were, and so forth. We've also done a significant amount of training with staff and managers both in Illinois and in Maine. We've done training of judiciary, prosecutors, and many others. In each state, they have formed a policy board, which is a really multi-agency policy board who's very much involved in the oversight of the entire project. And then, additionally, we've formed, like in Maine, an implementation team, which is much more internal in terms of their organization. And in Illinois, a coordinating council, which brings state courts and all of the counties that are in the first sort of phase of implementation together to really work on those implementation issues.
And how has this effort been received there so far?
You know, so far it's been received, I think, very well. It's not that people aren't skeptical, because to some people it's still very new. To others, it's well established because they're familiar with the literature. I think one of the beauties of this work in terms of evidence-based practices is it's pretty easy for people to come to agreement, no matter what their sort of political or philosophical position is, that having less crime and less victims is a good thing, and using resources more widely is a good thing. And so when you come with that to start with, I think it really helps people come together and be open to learning about how you do that. And there's such solid research around this that I think it's helpful to people. It's a constant process, you know, of working through this with policymakers for them to continue to understand it and feel comfortable with it and feel comfortable with the ways in which it changes their agency's work. Also, I think internally in these agencies,
you know, anytime you go through major change, there's some resistance and some anxiety about, you know, what that's going to mean for their jobs and how the agency's going to change.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Elise Clausen, Executive Director of the Climate Justice Institute about evidence-based practices for community. Now, getting back to implementing evidence-based practices and community practices agencies, how can the agencies that want to make the move in this direction, how can they get the ball rolling?
Well, there's probably several ways, but I think one of the most important ways, or one of the most useful ways, is if there is a champion in the state, and I've seen that champion be different people. Sometimes it's been the director of the Department of Corrections or the director of Community Corrections. Sometimes it's been a judge or a prosecutor, but someone who says, you know, we really ought to be looking at this because the literature's pretty good here. I think the early phase is really creating an awareness of what this evidence-based practices is, providing some presentations and some training to policymakers, whether that's legislators or criminal justice policymakers, and really beginning to sort of, you know, introduce the concepts and get people familiar with this, and then to bring a group of folks together to really talk about, okay, if we were going to do this in our state or in our community, what would be some of the first steps? And there is quite a bit of information about it on a website, certainly the National Institute of Corrections website and our website and others have a great deal of information. There are also people in the country who can come and make presentations to groups and local communities and can really talk with them, I think, about here's what this work, this body of work, and this body of knowledge says, and here's some of the things you might want to think about in your own community if you wanted to move forward. So that's kind of the first step, I think, is to build some awareness and some interest in it.
Can you talk about some of your experiences in Multnomah County when you're trying to implement evidence-based?
Sure. Initially, and I have to sort of step back a little bit because we started this really at the state level, educating state policymakers and legislators and all of the counties about this when I was first at the State Department of Corrections. And we just kind of kept that going for a long time, and we also really encouraged everyone to really develop plans and programs that met evidence-based practices. And then those days we called that what works. And then when I went to the county, initially I did just what we were talking about. I brought a group of people together, the county commissioners, the judges, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, human service organizations, and we did a full couple of days worth of training around really what is this work. We then brought a policy team together that included all those key players and was actually chaired by the chief criminal judge at the time, Judge Bearden. And we had a budget crisis. We had a major budget crisis. I mean, we were going to lose a lot of money. And that meant we were going to lose positions. And we already had very high caseloads and were probably not meeting the expectations of judges and prosecutors and others. So we got them all together and began to really prioritize how are we going to make these cuts and what were we going to use our existing budget for. And we really decided to formulate our policies and use our budget really based on what the evidence said. We also developed an internal working group that went through that same budget kind of process, and we had formal communication between our internal group and the external group. And we spent several months really mapping that out. We did actually zero-based budgeting. We started from the beginning and said, okay, if we were starting over, what would this look like? And we involved a lot of staff at a lot of levels. I think Multnomah County at this point would say they've been through at this point about three phases of this work. The initial phases where they really reconfigured their caseloads and really taught people these new knowledge and new skills, and then began to really implement the supervision strategies, the programmatic strategies. We also gathered lots of data so that we could really understand if we were, in fact, implementing what we said we were implementing. We contracted for some research, and we actually received a National Institute of Justice grant to do some research to determine whether or not we were making the changes we said we were making, and if we did that, what was the impact in terms of recidivism. So, you know, we worked very closely, I think, with those external partners and then internal staff for a long period of time. And did lots of training, did lots of organizational change work, and tried to really help people through this kind of change, because it's hard to go through that kind of change, and it's a multi-year effort.
As you just mentioned, it's a difficult change to make, essentially a total system change. So how can agencies prepare for those difficulties and overcome them to integrate evidence-based practices into the way they do their everyday business?
Well, I tend to think that, for one thing, the budget's a really powerful way in which to make system change, because if you use your resources to support the policy direction that you're moving in, that really signals to everyone that you're very serious. I also think that it's very important over time to not only help people gain new skills, but do the organizational development work to help people through, help both individuals and the agency itself through that transitional time, because it's kind of chaotic as you're making these really significant changes. And help people be comfortable with these new skills, and also hold on to the things that they have done in the past that really make sense and that really still fit in this new world. I think the other thing is ultimately you really begin to change the expectations. You do collect data, and I was very fortunate because I had some really incredible people. I had a great team of managers and a number of people throughout the organization who over time became very supportive and were incredibly skilled in this area, and I think it's very important to build that kind of management team and support, you know, what I call a critical mass of support throughout the agency. I was also very fortunate in the sense that I was able to do succession planning, and the people who have replaced me, Joanne Fuller is the current director there, has really taken this whole process, you know, to the next level. And, you know, I think that's to Multnomah County's credit and to the staff who have, you know, maintained this sort of perseverance through the number of years that it takes to do this work.
Great. Well, that concludes today's live talk. Thank you, Elise Glasson, Executive Director of the Crime and Justice Institute, for joining us today. To learn more about evidence-based practices, community corrections, be sure to read this week's article on corrections.com. For CNN, I'm Megan Vanderbilt.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.